You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Freedom of movement, the right to privacy. Both are concepts you've probably thought about a little bit differently since the lockdowns and civil liberty intrusions that started in 2020. Even farther back, if you really think about it. Well, our friends at privacypost.io have you covered of something that you're probably going to want to know about if you value both of those things. PrivacyPost.io is a privacy by default virtual mail and business center designed for the location independent, expat, and international entrepreneur community. Anyone seeking financial freedom should consider PrivacyPost.io. Their services include virtual mail, a professional business address, privacy trust services, company formation, and a Portugal D7 residency and virtual domicile in the privacy-respecting and income-tax-free state of South Dakota. PrivacyPost.io protects you from third parties, overreaching government agencies, and complicit cloud-based platforms invading your personal, private, and business information. Privacy is freedom of association, expression, commerce, and mobility. Isn't it time you took it a bit more seriously? PrivacyPost.io is your partner in freedom. Go to PrivacyPost.io for more information today.
Prepare yourself. You're on the run with Remzo W. Martinez.
Yeah, I appreciate you being here, man. It's really funny. I'm glad that Mark connected us because I did that post-libertarian episode a couple of weeks ago. And I'll be quite honest, I've stayed off like libertarian Twitter as much as I could because I just genuinely don't like hurting myself as much anymore. But, I started hearing that phrase probably in around July, and then throughout the fall it got something that was, you know, just getting everywhere. People were bitching at Mark. People were bitching at Jason Stapleton, Pete Quinones, and the such. And, you know, the term post-libertarian started getting thrown around. And all I really took from it was it, and, you know, I'm glad you're here because you're the person that really kind of opened Mark up to this. And that's where I started really thinking about it more. It's this idea of, you know, what I call, like, libertarian apologism. It's that despite how the world turns and despite how many false prophets and false promises we kind of throw ourselves, the world is going one way and it seems like the liberty movement is going a completely different way, and I don't necessarily want to ride off the cliff with a lot of people. That said, that doesn't mean that I've stopped believing in libertarian principles. That doesn't mean that I've stopped, you know, identifying as a libertarian, but it's now the least important part of my life now, and what I value more is how I'm actually achieving more liberty in my life. Now, a while back, you had published an article discussing this, and in detail, I've never really seen people go into it. You really look at the libertarian movement as not just having started like a year ago or 2016. You really go back to the libertarian moment that happened with Ron Paul and kind of like where we've grown, whether we've liked it or not since. So I kind of just want to get into that. And I mean, I'll just peel the Band-Aid off right now. Post-libertarian, is it a label? Is it a phase? I mean, even as I talk about it with people, I have a general understanding, but I think it's bigger than just somebody that just doesn't want to deal with, you know, libertarian infighting and stupid party shit and all that stuff.
When I wrote the essay, I did it for a few reasons. One of them was I hated the label of post-libertarianism and the idea that, like, just like postmodernism, we can kind of do something like that. And I kind of, and frankly, the first time I was hearing about it, being on Liberty Twitter, you have a point there about Twitter in general has this degenerate effect on you. If you're not careful, it can really overtake your life.
I would rather take a cigarette and stick the hot end on my arm at this point. Like, my life has gotten better because I don't like being bogged down in, like, the same arguments that we've been having forever.
And I think you've really encapsulated a lot of the sentiment that's kind of been brewing within the broader movement, because just like you were saying, I'm the same way. It's like, these are ideas that I have, in a sense, sworn fealty to for a good portion of my adult life and spent a good deal of time defending them. And then we have the year of, you know, then we have 2020, we have everything that happened there. But more importantly, it was kind of an awakening. So to back it up just a little bit before I get into it, I had done a project where I was writing and kind of doing a podcast in like 2014, 15, up and through the election of Donald Trump with a few friends. It was kind of like in conjunction with a college thing. And it was, you know, we put some good stuff out. But it was tough to keep it going. And, you know, I wasn't as disciplined then as I am now. So it wasn't something that ever really got off the ground. And then I got a job that I still have that I really, really like. And I kind of was like, you know what? I'm just going to stop. I can always come back to writing. I can always come back to podcasting because I love the medium, frankly. If my path goes that way. And in 2020, my path went that way again, because I realized that, like, you know, I had something to say, and, you know, I think I have a perspective that helps people understand the world better. And a lot of that is informed by libertarianism and libertarian thought. But I noticed, as I started to engage on Twitter and other social media, I started to notice some of the patterns that a lot of people would levy as criticisms of libertarianism, right? Or of libertarians, we might say. Because the people that I knew are generally, you know, generally speaking, kind of found success, you know, maybe not major success, but are like stable, like, you know, they moved into business interests or
like
their interests kind of changed
beings.
A little bit. Yeah. Now you were saying, what is it? Is it an identity? Is it a label? I think it's a moment. And that's what I talked about in the post-libertarian moment defined, which is an essay people can read. And as you point out, I tried to give a little bit of a history, and then I tried to talk about what it is, why it happened, what it is not. And I never remember the fourth one, even though I wrote it. Oh, what to do, I think was the prescription was pretty much after that. And it was, honestly, because I don't think this is like an identity, a label that people can really adopt for themselves. And philosophically, I'm very interested in the idea of identity. So it all kind of connects.
What makes it difficult for me is that I feel that, one, I don't like superficial labels. Mm-hmm. I just feel that for a space like this in the political sphere, it doesn't add anything. If anything, I think it subtracts from opportunities.
Yeah,
it's why I don't go around putting, like, you know, libertarian in my Twitter bio. I have a problem with anyone that puts that type of stuff in their, like, online bios, for example. I think that it is a substitute for a personality. But with that said, you know, like, with my show and everything, this is an extension of my business. This is an extension of me as an individual. I want, even though I have certain ideas and principles, I want to be open to more people. And the last thing I want to do is focus on things that ultimately don't matter. And fighting about how I identify on a certain thing, I think rather than telling you what I think I am, I could show you what I'm doing. And if you want to engage with me, or if you want to work with me or do whatever, you'll find a reason to do that.
Yeah. In the essay, what I say, the divide currently, and this is all surrounding the idea of political action, by the way. That's the only reason why any of this really happened. If it wasn't for the fact that Michael Heiss started the LPMC and recruited a lot of people to try and take over the Libertarian Party, I'm not sure we would be having the conversation in this way at this moment. I think a lot of
so weird how it's worked out.
Mm-hmm. It now, and I would also say in 2015, 2016, when the LPMC was started, it was at least worth trying, right? Like, it's not just like, if, you know, in an abstract sense without direct empirical knowledge. And so when I, as so I'm like, I'm doing the writing thing and the podcasting thing, and I'm trying to gain an audience and get my message out there, right? So as part of that, I was like, you know what? The way I see it, it's like monthly meetings, probably a couple extra meetings like that, you to organize people and to talk to people. Dave Smith says that he needs people to join, so I'm going to do it. I'm going to pay my dues for the LP. I'm going to pay my dues for the LP of Illinois, and I'm going to see what this is all about. And I, you know, like in my close group of friends that I talk about stuff with, I said two things. I said, I'm going to go in and see whether it's possible, right, to take over the Libertarian Party. And then the second thing I wanted to figure out, just from in my own way, I'm not saying I have all the answers, but I think I have some of them. That's why I wrote the essay. That's why I think this is catching on and people are starting to talk about it more and more. But the second thing is, what I wanted to see whether it was worth taking over the Libertarian Party. I looked at it in a business way, the way a venture capitalist, as it were, might try to acquire a business. Like, what if I'm buying a business that isn't doing well? What am I actually doing? Okay, do they have IP, right? Do they have some sort of intellectual property or a patent that I can use and like incorporate into my business? Do they have a real estate that I'd be interested in acquiring and could possibly sell at some sort of a profit? Do they have machinery that is, you know, that would cost me, you know, certain amount of dollars? And of course the labor too, right? The people involved that actually understand how to run a business or operate the business, even if it's not being run well. And I tried to apply these sorts of insights that I had witnessed in my own personal and professional development to this joining of the LP.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Mm-hmm. Don't you think it also matters the type of partners you go into the venture with?
I think
that would be, and I bet you're probably going to bring it up, but like that was the biggest thing that was immediately like a red flag for me. We're going to get these people who don't do much stuff in the real world, like the day-to-day physical world, to suddenly start a political movement that largely just seems like a lot of smoke and mirrors online.
Yeah. And listen, people can go and listen to past episodes of my podcast from like late 2020, early 2021. In fact, I can point out the episode in particular. It's the one I did right after the election of 2020, where we were kind of, and I did it with a close friend of mine, and we were talking about the future at one point in time and to the question of political action and whether that should be in the LP or within the GOP. Because again, this isn't about, we're not talking about academic discussions. I love having those. I love exploring ideas. It's why I talk about philosophy. Like I do that stuff that gives me pleasure to read philosophy, right? So like, I love the academic discussion, but that's not all there is. It's not all theory. My job right now, ironically enough, is like as an applications engineer. It's under a sales umbrella, but like I actually work in the application. So not every day, but at least once a month, I'm confronted with a problem that was created by some design engineer with a degree who doesn't understand how things work in the real world. So this is I think without practice, then your ideas really aren't worth a lot, you know, and that kind of traces to a general American pragmatism, if you're wondering.
Talk about the irony.
Right. But so I came from this very heady, like studying philosophy and economics and thinking that might have been my path to go the PhD route to kind of literally being thrown into manufacturing eventually. Like it wasn't, you know, there's steps in between. But so I was faced with kind of the reality of my decisions. Like it didn't actually matter if I could talk really well in that environment. It mattered if I could get things done. So how does this relate? Like I said, and you pointed out, well, the people that you're getting involved with too. And I met there are nice people within the LP who I met who, you know, I would grab a beer with, I would, you know, hang out with them, so on and so forth. But when you walk into an LP meeting, you're basically confronted, and I'm in a state like Illinois, right? That's where I live. So I'm already in a failed state, right? Like Illinois is not on the upswing. It's on the downswing.
May God be with you.
Yeah. And I'm right outside of Chicago to boot. And I grew up out, and that's where I spent most of my life growing up, like from 7 to 18. So, you know, I'm already kind of in a state where I understand it's kind of pointless because there's such a machine that operates against you. But moreover, when you go in, it's like anybody that you're talking about running is basically expected to lose. but we're still going to spend in the at least the thousands, I've also heard tens of thousands of dollars in fundraising to get ballot access for statewide races. And this is considered normal for LP, for like for the LP. And from the outside looking in, as not a member, kind of, I guess it kind of makes sense. But once you actually look at the money that's involved, because by the way, it is so difficult as a third party to get ballot access in most states. Like, really? A state like Illinois? We're going to do this? And I was, and at the time I was even saying like, listen, I think we shouldn't do this. We should focus at the county level. And for anybody that was, that had been like in the LP, they kind of looked at me like I was an alien with two heads. It's like, what do you mean? Like, what do you mean? We're, of course we have to run somebody for governor. Like, we're the Libertarian Party. Going back to that conversation I had, what I said at the time of why I was more interested in getting involved with the LP than getting involved with the GOP, and to the extent that I would, right? Like, I'm a writer, I'm a podcaster. This is what I like to do the most. But I talk about politics, so I, you know, you have to think in those terms. But I said, the Libertarian Party bears my name. I'm a libertarian. Shouldn't that be where I go? So that was the conversation I had then. Then I decided to join with those two criterion, like we just went over. And what I, my own personal opinion is that yes, the LPMC can take over, but no, I don't think it's worth it. And I think what the LPMC has built up is so powerful that it's limited by the Libertarian Party. And in fact,
it's almost become like they basically built their own institution. They wanted to simply be a caucus, but what they ended up doing was they formed their own institution. They formed their own PACs, for crying out loud, which, I mean, I remember speaking with Michael Heiss at Matt Kibbe's Christmas party, to name drop people for the hell of it, like 3 years ago, you know, like in the before times. Sure. And, you know, it was one of those moments where it was just like, you all have basically said that we're going to take over something inefficient. But at the same time, in order to take over this inefficient thing, we have to build something that's more sufficient. And it's like, why admit the cancer is the whole being instead of saying, hey, let's eliminate the cancer and move on with our life? Because it was almost like, dude, you could just go literally do your own thing, whether you wanted to be your own political party or you wanted to be a kingmaker, regardless of party, depending on candidates, departing on races. It was always like we're fighting to be the cool kids at the special needs table.
That's one way of putting it, for sure.
It will not win you points at parties, but it's the only way I could describe it.
Yeah. I think there's something to that. What I would say is, you know, part of the, it, you know, it's also like, so then, as you were saying, other people are starting to talk about it, throw criticisms in the air of how it's not going to work. You know, Matt Erickson, Pete Quinones, Jason Stapleton had some things to say about it as well. And I was kind of like, I was one of those people that didn't realize these divides existed. You know what I mean? And I was, and so I heard somebody like Matt and then later Andrew from Popular Liberty as well. And it was kind of like, all right, I can kind of understand what these guys are saying, but I don't get this part. Well, my method is not to just dismiss people like that unless I can be like pretty sure that it's, you know, that you're not like some guy recently came at me on Twitter and was trying to compare like nuns and monks to communists and saying that like, you know, monks live in communism. And it's, and like, that's not somebody I'm going to engage with, right? That's not an honest actor. They were a boomer. So that's part of the reason why, or I guess technically Gen X, but whatever.
The thing with Stapleton, and I mean, I credit Jason with like, you know, throwing like some gasoline on that fire. Mm-hmm. I think for a lot of people, they lunged at Jason because Jason was flexing on a lot of people that were insecure about their money. Like that, yeah. as like narrow as I could get, he was like, I can buy my own freedom. And other people were like, well, what if we can't do that? And he's like, that's not my problem that you're poor. And that's
not being poor.
Yeah. I mean, that's what kind of instigated it, but it's like, they were so focused on that one thing. They were kind of, you know, missing the forest for the trees, so to speak. And I found myself very, very much in that state. And I mean, I wouldn't even call it this post-libertarian, big air quotes, because I'm probably going to butcher it, like this concept of just move on past these political practices. I mean, I've almost seen it, even in just this very short amount of time, go from just evading politics to just trying to become as independent from any and all systems as possible, short of becoming like, you know, a Unabomber in the woods type of deal. Like, what if we tried to just become as wealthy and powerful and influential as we possibly could, so we could not just simply be post-libertarian in that sense if we're going to pigeonhole ourselves that way. I would even just call it post-political. I would even say that's the phase of my life that I'm currently in.
I'm in a post-politics
stage.
Yeah, I would say in 2016, one of my hooks was I was trying to move the conversation beyond politics. Because I thought, and by the way, for the record, that is a solution. Like, removing yourself from the political system, focusing on your own personal development, becoming stable, right? Trying to get as far ahead as you can. Those are solutions. I'm also just somebody who's always been interested in politics. And so, like, I find myself
getting pulled back.
And right. But I'll tell you what, I also find myself re-entering it with a new frame of mind based off of the insights that I have learned by implementing those things in my life. And I, you know, to the specifics of the don't be poor message, which I'm a big fan of and I've written about, is, you know, I understand on a personal level how that can hurt, because it wasn't that long ago that I didn't have money in my bank account left over every single month. And in fact, I was operating in the red a lot.
Oh, there's a story I tell people where it's like, I took a quote job on a campaign. I got paid like $300 to work like 60 hours one week. It was miserable. And I had to provide, I wasn't getting comped for my gas. So I had like a collection of like silver dollars and presidential coin memorabilia. And I had to sell it at a pawn shop to afford gas to drive to the other part of the state to go work for less than minimum wage for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And they lost.
Yeah.
And even if they had one, that doesn't change my life at all.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And, you know, and I kind of seen some of that, of how, you know, and like the GOP, the Democrats, they do this stuff. This isn't like unique to the LP, right?
Yeah.
That the way the system can just churn, like chew people up and spit them out. Cause, you know, I'd seen it firsthand in like the 2016 election or the 2012 election, excuse me. For example, in particular, cause I was like at that time I was part of like the College Republicans down in Miami. And so I was kind of like doing things and they're like, hey guys, come on by. We're going to have a campaign event. And turns out that campaign event is, we want you to sit here and make phone calls. And I've been burned by like other agencies before where, yeah, like they, you know, they want you to sell a product for them, but that they don't comp your gas. So I know exactly the kind of things that you're talking about. What I talk about, so it might be useful, and I have it pulled up here, to just like say what I defined the libertarian moment as, if this could work. I just bought an iPhone for the first time, so I'm still getting used to like
you're
the
part
whole,
of the cult now.
I technically have both, but yes.
Well, you're going to shed the other one eventually. It'll come overnight. You won't even realize it.
Yeah,
it's
I know.
It's like leaving
a
child you don't like at the mall. If you just keep driving, maybe you'll forget they're there.
Oh, my. That moment occurs. So the post-libertarian moment occurs when, in the face of lockdowns, a libertarian sees the dogmatic professions of faith and popular democratic political strategies as insufficient methods of stopping government and corporate tyranny. Here's another way of putting it. I believe that there are a lot of good ideas in the Austrian school, right, in the minds of Rothbard and Mises and Hoppe and Hayek and all these other people whom I've looked up to. I think they have the right solution for things. I think, in fact, it would create a more stable society if there were policies put through that are broadly speaking libertarian. But in 2020, when the governor of your state told you you couldn't go to work anymore, or you were one of the lucky essential people, where was the libertarian then? We weren't in the boardrooms. We weren't in the Oval Office. We weren't in the governor's mansion. We weren't even in the state houses. So that's a problem, because here we have real tyranny. These are the times that will be written about in history this next decade. These are the times that people will hopefully look in the future and be like, how did it get so bad? And yeah, it might not seem like that right now, but you know, history over 100 years can be summarized in a paragraph, and that paragraph can be pretty awful to read. So that's a full stop. Where were we? We had people on shows, we had people with reach and influence who were able to do things, but specifically politically. Oh, well, you know, there's a huge contingent of an anti-politics movement in this that says if you even think about running for office, you're an immoral person, even though the person that probably inspired you to look up these ideas was in political office. at one point in time. So here we have a very obvious contradiction. The whole don't be poor thing is another one. Supposedly we're the capitalists, right? Mm-hmm. Right? We're the people who defend free markets. And we're the people who defend the idea, generally speaking, that ethically gained profits are a good thing. It's a signal of it's a signal that you're doing the right thing. But tell somebody that if they can't afford to pay their rent, they shouldn't be devoting their time to political organizing. Or even just, you know, if you can't pay your rent, maybe you shouldn't be doing a show. Or if you, or, you know, if that's how you're doing your show, like, you know, hustle, man, hustle. Like, I'm not trying to, of course, take anything away from people in that regard.
But it's sad because you're not pointing out one example. You're not pointing out a handful of people. I've encountered hundreds, if not thousands, over the course of the last decade who will go ahead and their whole personality will be trying to lecture people about libertarian solutions and libertarian reactions, and they will go ahead and, you know, it's almost like being a fanatic over a band or a singer or celebrity or something. There's just so much attention on making sure this person succeeds. It's almost the equivalent of people who are donating to Kylie Jenner so that way she could be the world's youngest female billionaire ever. When I saw that, I was like, are people that stupid? And then when I look at libertarian politics, I'm like, yes, they are. And, you know, I remember pulling Jason Stapleton back into this. He was getting into an argument with a bunch of poor people on Twitter. And, you know, one of those people basically said, you know, I'm willing to go to every state convention in every state over the next year, except I need you to help me get there by donating to my GoFundMe. And it was actually a joke by somebody. It was somebody pointing out the fallacy.
I think it was Mark. It might have been Mark Metz, actually.
I think it was, maybe.
I know he did something like that. But anyway, keep going.
It was something like that. And I remember laughing my ass off because that's how it is. It's constant and regular charity for people. And it's like, if you want to go ahead and do something like this, you first need to understand, one, it's a hobby for the rich. That's really what it is, plain and simple. At least from my view, it's a hobby for the rich.
You've definitely been on the inside.
Oh, brother, I was as swampy as it fucking came. I walked out with scales in the morning, and I loved it. But it was one of those situations where when I used to have a show, since, you know, we're getting to know each other. I used to have a show where every other day, as I was living at home, as I was bleeding cash, I was interviewing libertarian candidates from across the country, talking about their amazing ideas and how people could support them and everything. And then eventually I was like, fuck this. And then years later, when I had my come to Jesus road to Damascus moment, I start on a different route and I start doing things a little bit differently. And now what I really love doing is working with people, consulting people, and helping them grow side businesses, helping them generate active and passive streams of income so they can achieve more options and more freedom in their life. And literally the other day, I had two cold leads that ended up working out well, and I'm helping these two individuals. One is in their early 20s, one is in their late 50s, already looking at their retirement window, try and create some additional revenue so they could pay their bills and be a little bit more comfortable. And somebody said, Remzo, if you're so good at this and if you want to help so many people, why are you charging for that? And I was just like, do you go to Subway and ask for free sandwiches? No, I would never do that. I'm like, do you go to your barber and say, if you're so good at this, why don't you cut my hair for free? No, that doesn't make sense. It's a capitalist system. I'm like, then you just answered your own question. Fuck you. And besides, I put half of it in a fucking podcast twice a week as well.
Right, so you actually are doing that. Yeah. You actually are doing that thing.
It's this weird disconnect, and I think it has less to do with political purity, willingness to be an acolyte for a cause you really believe in. I see a lot of insecurity, and I think I can narrow it down to just one thing. 2020 was an IQ test for people, and a lot of people fucking failed, and they can't live with their own failure.
That's definitely a part of it. You know, of course, you know, in that you study intelligence, you understand, or really you study Pareto, you understand that most things fall into a bell curve, right? And in fact, I think some of this is just reordering the people who should be paid attention to. That's how I see some of this post-libertarian business, because I really see it as, there's a couple points I wanted to hit. One of them being, you know, in 1970, in 1990, in 2000, even in 2008.
In the before times.
In the before times. That the point here is there is a catastrophic moment of history from our perspective that occurred, right? And so you have to, in the face of something like that, you either can like retreat, as I put it in the essay, I talk about people who live in a moment, right? And you can live in a moment of history for the rest of your life if you choose to. It's not how I choose to live though, right? I'm not interested in the person I was. I'm interested in learning, you know, like obviously self-growth and stuff like that, but I'm not interested in being the person I was at 16 for the rest of my life. For some people, that might be, right? Because they were captain of the football team or something like, right? You know, as the adage goes, peaking
Johnny
in high
Lawrence
school.
Johnny Lawrence and Cobra Kai, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, right? Like peaking in high school, right? So I, you know, some people live in that moment for the rest of their life. Some people, and you know, it could happen at different points in time. And certainly politically, I think people like to live in a moment because again, there's this sentiment attached. One of the reasons why I think I was able to put things in such a useful way, right? Because I think that's what my essay does is kind of crystallize. It traces a history. It talks about what it is from any of the people involved at the highest levels. They basically signed off on it, if not explicitly, then by not coming after me. The only people who have attempted to criticize it have no idea what they're talking about, right? And in fact, nobody has actually tried criticizing it in large form. You know, like it's kind of gone quiet. Maybe because I don't have that large of a profile, but also maybe because it's not something that when you read it, it's like, oh yeah, this makes sense. Like, I don't, you know, this follows, right? Because what I do is sense making. I want to go a little bit deeper here for a second, though, because there, you know, you pointed out like people donating to Kylie Jenner just so she could be rich. You've talked about, you've kind of talked about like people as idiots for wanting to follow these types of things. I really take a different view of that in the sense that, you have to go deeper than just like a simple individualist frame. We have to understand ourselves at like a biological and an evolutionary basis, right? Evolutionary biology in particular is a field that I've been interested in since I was introduced to it by people like, you know, Jordan Peterson, Gad Saad, Brett Weinstein, Heather Hein. I just finished their book. It's fantastic.
Would you recommend it?
I would highly recommend it.
Yeah. I need something on my reading list.
Yeah, it's really, really good. It reads really easily. Their prose is very nice and accessible. So that's, and it's done with a lot of storytelling, which is very useful. But like, so, and you could look, and then the work of like Jonathan Haidt with the psychology of morality, right? And these different things is we are beings who crave to be a part of something. Even within, you know, like, you know, the rugged individualism was like a progressive construct. Mises's methodological individualism has very little to do with the rugged individualism of like the early 20th century. You know, we're beings that crave meaning, we crave community, we crave purpose, right? And so for some people, that purpose becomes, so I look at it as how do I direct people to a purpose, kind of like you were saying with growing businesses, how can I help direct people in a direction that will, like towards a purpose that will cause them to flourish and not wither? Because, you know, as in business, if you're not growing, you're dying, right? I do sales, like, you know, the point is to drive sales. So I think, I don't like taking things away from people, but I think a lot of time, but if you think you're this like prescient person who has no allegiances, no, like that your ideas don't come from somewhere, that you think for yourself, man, I hate that phrase. I'll be honest with you. I understand the sentiment, but like technically it's incorrect. But so I think there are deeper forces at play that if all you've done is study economics and like libertarian political philosophy, and you haven't looked at other areas of philosophy like epistemology or metaphysics, if you're not well versed in theology, I'm not talking about being raised religious. I'm talking about understanding theology. What is the defense and explanation for all of these things? I think it's very easy to miss these more natural human things. What did I say at the beginning? Like, I think to the point, the reason why I thought joining the Libertarian Party was a good idea, as smart as I might be, was because it bore my name, because that's what I am. So that's where I should go.
I find And I will consider a personal weakness of mine, and I think I identify it more in other people since I've been able to identify it in myself. I think the term is solecism, wondering whether or not you're the only cognizant person and whether other mm-hmm. people have as much level of consciousness and cognizance as you do. I probably screwed that up.
Yeah,
like I do often kind of fall into that sometimes. Like I'll look at people and I'll actually think like, are they as capable of observing life and taking information from it as I am, or are they just, you know, or are they not programmed that way or something else? Mm-hmm. And I see it as less as, you know, how do I put this? I used to really apply that to people without even really thinking about it. I used to just think a lot of people, you're just never going to be able to convince them. You're never going to be able to make them see or feel or understand things you do. And now I'm at the point now where I try and have a little bit more sympathy, especially when it comes to people who would otherwise be part of my flock, because they're reacting to things based off their own earned experiences and their own understanding of the world from wherever they come from. And I think it's really hard, and maybe it's coming from a point of ego, it's really hard for me to talk about things as if I really know what I'm talking about unless I really know what I'm talking about and I have some firsthand experience with it.
And most people don't feel that way. And most people don't feel that way about politics. Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah, no, I mean, you hit it right on the head. And that's the thing that I think kind of bothers me about libertarians, because what I will say is that there's something special about people that are willing to read books from dead Austrian economists from 100 years ago. But I don't understand how you're willing to do that, but you're not willing to improve your own lives. That's a disconnect. I almost feel like they should be mutual. They should be overlapping. That if you understand these things, you should be preparing yourself for the coming challenges instead of being victim to it each time.
Yeah, I would say this is where learning about like Big Five personality and learning and studying more about like biology and evolutionary biology has helped me put this in a better frame. In a strictly economic frame, this is a matter of the division of labor, right? Like we wouldn't experience, and as a philosophical skeptic, which is what I consider my school to be, my school of thought to be, that's my method for a lot of things, is putting inquiry before dogmatism, putting doubt before assent. And I've at this point trained my brain to where like I automatically run through these things very, very quickly for complex topics. But to the point of learning about like the Big Five, so we think personality exists across five dimensions. Well, the person you just described is somebody who I think would be categorized as like maybe high in openness of like above average intelligence, but perhaps lower in and like but introverted and less conscientious, which is like the hard working metric. Like how well do you show up on time? And I'm saying this as somebody who is chronically, I run on Cuban time, I'm 10 minutes late. Like, you know, so it's like, that's my own personal thing. I try to show up places on time. My hair appointment every month is a great example of this. I drive out to the suburbs so I can go see my parents afterwards. I've been seeing the same guy to cut my hair for like 4 or 5 years. So it's great because I don't have to like explain what I want. He already knows it. So I'm, you know, it's like always a big thing. That's my day. That's the big plan. And I am still 5 to 10 minutes late driving 90 on the highway to get out there on a Saturday morning. So, which is to say, some of this is putting it in that perspective, right? So, like, and the looking into and studying the skeptics of history helped me frame this in a very early way, because, like the skeptical school of thought can't exist unless there's two conflicting narratives within a society. And one of the earliest ones, you can point to somebody like Socrates, but in that it was formalized was in the Third Academy after Aristotle. Because Plato's the first, Aristotle's the second, and then the Third Academy, the Pyrrhonians, the academic skeptics, as they were called, which was different from the Sextus Empiricus brand. But to the point was, you had in Greece, amongst the Hellenistic people, you had a debate, philosophically speaking, between the Stoics, who were mystical. Right. They believed in a natural ordering to the universe. And this ordering was so profound that you don't have control over anything but your judgment of the thing. You don't even have control over your actions and words and how you respond to things. And so there was this divine ordering, right? There was this idea of providence within that. And so that led to practical steps. and you had the Epicureans. And the Epicureans didn't think God existed. He was very materialist. He thought it was all about maximizing pleasure for today. Now, let me ask you that question. Let me ask you the question I like asking. Does that sound like any other point in human history? And so in the wake of these two things, you had the rise of the skeptics.
It's funny to be put that way.
Yeah. Right. And so when all you've read if you've read Mises, you are of a certain above average intelligence, right? Just to be able to get through that. But I think one of the things I've called libertarianism an accident of the internet. And I think also it's a movement that suffers from popularity. Because in broad terms, you know, I peg it in the essay to 2008 because that's a political consequence. But really, we can trace it to like the 60s, right? You know, Murray Rothbard and how many people in his living room, right? You could count the libertarians.
I always liked the real acronym for Cato, for the Cato Institute. It's Crane and the others, and then Ed Crane is fighting the Kochs. So it should have been Cato with a K, like Bruce Lee's Cato, and then it just jumps into a bunch of other shit. But I mean, you know, I see the thought that you're following this with.
Let me complete the loop if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Which is to say, it was largely started by academics, the intellectual movement, certainly the Mises crowd, right? Which is, I think, but judging by our conversation, is probably what you would consider an intellectual home as well, right? The Mises Institute. So certainly that crowd was very academic focused. Well, that's great if the only people who are looking into what you're talking about are academics. When you move or people capable of that level of thought and sophistication and also putting it in its proper sphere, which is where I'm going.
Already open to that level of understanding.
Correct. And in fact, are being trained elsewhere to have that because it is something that requires some training. So when you take that academic mindset and you try to maximize that across the population, you're going to have a bad time because not every person who likes the ideas is going to be able to interact with them in the same way. This is, again, why I made the differentiation before, you'll recall, of like knowing your theology and your apologetics versus like somebody who just goes to church. Both of them can be considered Christian, Muslim, Jewish, as the case may be, right? Both of them are considered the same thing, but they have completely, if we really tried to tease it out, they have completely different layers of understanding as to what that thing is. I don't see anything wrong with that. In fact, I would argue that unless your idea can operate on these multiple levels, I think the Catholic Church is a good example of this. But because you could say, I could say, Jesus tells you not to sin, so don't do it, or you're going to hell. Or we could get into a much longer, deeper, like theological discussion of like God's love for us, how we're all made in His image, and so then to sin against another person, to harm your brother or your sister or somebody, you know, a fellow Christian is to harm God, right? And so again, there's different ways in which we can express the same idea. This all coalesces in what I term the paradox of identity, which I think, especially in politics, is a big. Is part of the reason why we have so much dissonance that occurs. And of course, going back to my idea before, like the best ideas are ones that harmonize across multiple levels because harmonies are different frequencies that operate in that create a pleasant tone. So the paradox of identity briefly is that for a given word, and other people have, this isn't like unique to me, but I call it a paradox and I specifically put it towards identity, right? Because there's like the postmodern construction, which kind of goes like a word is defined by a word, which is defined by a word. And so it's words all the way. What I talk about is the fact that like taking the word libertarian, I have certain positive associations and certain negative associations. You have certain positive associations and negative associations. Somebody else has the same thing. Now, my positive associations could actually be your negative associations, or we could share the negative associations, but not the positive associations. And so in philosophy, the way by which we can overcome this is through inquiry and through the exercise of reason. So we can actually say, okay, well, I'll say a lot, like, what do you mean by that? Right. So as a skeptic, I try not to talk about the truth with a capital T. I say that I'm looking for what is, and what is exists somewhere between expression and understanding. And so I'm like calibrated within that frame to try and figure out what is going on, what is the thing in itself.
I think to kind of and jump in if you find a weakness in what I'm about to say. I think I understand that almost in the way that it's why I liked Gary Johnson in 2012 and I didn't like Ron Paul, because Ron Paul was talking about certain terms and certain theories and certain worldviews that were completely alien to me, despite the fact that we both have the same intention, which is what drives us towards peace and broader freedom for people. I didn't understand that with Ron Paul at all. Whereas with Gary Johnson, he was very empirical about it when he was running as a Republican on the debate stage, and you could kind of contrast him and Paul because they both have the same direction in mind, the same destination. Except what I liked about Gary Johnson at the time was he was able to say, if we do X, Y, and Z, it guarantees this. This is why I go for this option. And I was like, yeah, well, they're right there. Why can't he, why can't the other guys be like that guy?
Yeah. Well, and I think somebody like Ron Paul, it was like the strength of his character came through, which is what which people admire. Again, looking for a leader, looking for an authority. This is a natural human tendency that we have. This is why people tend to look to the government as the authority. And this is why libertarianism failed the American people, frankly, in 2020, because we weren't interested in being that authority, broadly speaking. And, you know, there are reasons for that. Like, I'm not saying it's the easy task to operate within the Republican Party. But to the point is that that's the thing I take on as somebody who is trying to improve himself, right? Who is and you see that as you become a more stable person and you become somebody who people can depend on more and more, even if you were dependable to begin with, right? There can still be increase there. You start to notice how your opinion has sway, right? Because people trust you. And so this is again to the point of the political movement. I think to with the academic, again, it was like we tried to there was this explosion in popularity, but there was really not a good, well, the only one that existed was the corporate Coke infrastructure, right? Which is a different strain of libertarianism and one that I don't think is up to snuff. So what I've said is that the post-war order, the libertarian prescription to the post-war order is out of date. We are running Windows 2000 and we need to upgrade to Windows 10. Or 11, as the case may be, right? These are the analogies that I can use to try and elucidate the point. You could also spin it as being a victim of your own success in a way, right? Because I've always said, I get this from Montaigne, who is a Renaissance era skeptic, who his book is all of these interesting insights into how this was around the time that, you know, like Europeans were exploring / colonizing different places. And, you know, like we were looking and we were going to all these different countries. And like, you know, he has this whole section about how animals reason, right? How animals use reason and logic in their everyday life. And specifically with like elephants, who we know have a very sophisticated social structure, same with primates and things like that. So he was like, so what good is our reason per se in the face of this? Now, obviously I think a human does operate at a higher level, and we kind of know that as it relates to reason. But how many people do you know that treat logic as the end? As long as something is logical, therefore it must be the best thing, right? This is also a problem because most people aren't logically consistent, and they're not interested.
I mean, when you take postmodernism into account, the most logical action is usually the most utilitarian action, and that's what leads to freaking Nazi Germany.
Sure. Right.
They were extremely logical in their utilitarian skill that was, you know, pushed forth by postmodernism and everything else, but it was used for evil.
We are not these beings of pure logic and reason. We are animals as well, right? I think we also operate on another dimension of faith, which I think is what makes humans unique compared to the rest of the beings we find on Earth.
I'm a practicing Christian. Sometimes people are like, well, how much of a Christian are you? It's like, I went to Liberty University, bitch, which is why when I say bitch, they're like, well, obviously you didn't do that great. And the answer is, yeah, I didn't do that great. But like, I come from that worldview.
Sure.
And I'm also a practicing Stoic. And then people are like, well, how much of a Stoic are you? And it's like, I do a memento mori meditation when I wake up and before I go to sleep. It's like that's how much I am. And when people are like, well, is there an inconsistency? I'm like, no, because all the Stoics, most of them were men that had an external faith in things they cannot see. And then they're like, well, doesn't it just make you a callous, logical asshole? I'm like, well, I'm an asshole inherently because that's how my personality is. But I don't see Stoicism necessarily as a method of providing all the answers to the world. I see it as a Band-Aid, as a reminder for the things that I cannot control and how to accept it and move on so I can live functionally for the most part. And when it comes to those things, they might often seem contradictory, but it's one of those things that I have found. It's like we can lean very far into faith or we could lean very far into reason, but either way, you're going to be lost and without real answers for how to live your life if you don't find a way to marry the two.
And I completely agree with you. And what I would add is then we also have this biological underpinning, which is like the lizard brain, right? This is the thing that makes you want to, this is the thing that makes you want to chase after the guy that cuts you off in traffic. We have that operating within us as well. We're kind of complex, right? So I think one of the reasons, you know, you're somebody who's clearly thought out what his position is in the world and like what you believe and things like that. I'm of a similar mind. What we've witnessed, in the before times, the general idea would be,
the fingers when you do the before times. This is an audio show, so I do it more for my own being, but it's like,
times. But in the before times, but in the before times, right, like it seemed plausible that given a large enough reach with the right messenger on the right platform, libertarian ideas could sweep across the nation. Some people will disagree with me. Let's just go with it for the sake of argument, right? So we're going to now explore this idea and this chain of logic as far as we can. Well, what is that? I don't think you can say that. I do not understand how somebody could say that post 2020.
It's an inflection point.
Mm-hmm.
There is no treating the world today like 2020 didn't happen.
Yeah, the same way you wouldn't treat New York City without the Twin Towers, right? Yeah. Like they don't exist anymore.
We're running close on time. I really want to get your thoughts on this. We'll have to have you back on again to continue a lot of these conversations. But with the remaining time we have, you brought up this idea of a mass messenger to try and get these ideas out there to people. I think that's where a lot of people are trying to bridge this argument between the post-libertarian idea and this idea of just giving it another shot through the political route, primarily through the Libertarian Party. And I almost see it like prophesizing.
Hmm.
And, let's use Dave Smith as an example because, he's like the anti-Jason Stapleton in this situation. Hmm. And, I hate seeing friends fight. I know that they are good friends, but on this one, I've really just been kind of annoyed of Dave Smith because – it's like what I've said about Spike Cohen, who I personally really admire. I think Spike Cohen is a great messenger for liberty, but Spike Cohen has not improved my life any degree. And it's not his fault. It's not like it was.
What is Spike going to do for you, really?
Exactly. And it's, when it comes down to this whole.
I like Spike too, for the record. I just wanted to put it out there. I've never met him, but he seems like a really nice guy.
Yeah, he's a great guy, and I want him to keep doing what he's doing and grow larger. But, it's not like. I think there are a lot of people looking for like this almost messianic figure. And I think a lot of that is being pinned to Dave Smith right now because he's going to run for president. And what's going to happen is he's going to become more famous, he's going to become richer, he's going to become more influential. But all these people who will have sacrificed time, relationships, and treasure to boost a man who will never know their name, their lives will not increase. And I think we're at the moment where it's like, I don't think libertarianism is going to save the world, but I think it's going to save a lot of other people who would otherwise be casualties to the coming times that we have, not to be too apocalyptic on my end. And it's less about, trying to get as many other people awake in like a matrix sense. And it's more about, okay, you've obtained this knowledge. Good for you. Now do it to save yourself and maybe save a few others if you possibly can. I don't see a libertarian world. If anything, I see a world that's going to grow harsher where if you're a libertarian, you're either going to, get up on dry land or you're going to drown.
Yeah. I think, I think Dave Smith is a credit to somebody who can work really hard and make a success out of himself. I think he deserves all the praise that he gets. I want to see Dave Smith on the debate stage, on the Republican primary debate stage in 2024.
Whoa. Okay. You said Republican primary debate stage.
Yeah, I do.
That's the most controversial
I think if we want to get our message out there, right? I'm speaking to the in-group right now, which is what my essay is designed for, the in-group. I think if you read it as an outsider, you might be confused by some of the terminology and stuff. But
all the normal people tuned out half an hour ago.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm generally somebody who I don't think national elections are worth people's time. I'm somebody who's more interested in localism, it's not contradictory, but like I don't see myself living where I'm living for a long time. I kind of live the life of a nomad, but I understand but because of that, I really understand the importance of community and like being a part of like a town or a city. Because as somebody who moved around a lot, I never really experienced that. Right. Like I know people who lived in the same house for like 20 years. I think the longest I've lived in one place my entire life was 6 years. I think that was the longest I ever lived in like one location. Cause my parents are divorced, so we would go back and forth a lot anyway. So let's get back to the meat and right. And let's make sure this is something we can clip. I want to see Dave Smith on the Republican primary debate stage, because everybody already admits that Dave Smith is not going to win the presidency as a libertarian candidate. Dave Smith admits that he does not think that he will win if he runs as a libertarian. I think it's a shot. I think it's almost impossible for him to win in the Republican primary. But it gives our ideas an opportunity to be heard by the nation. And can you imagine anybody set up better to counterpunch the counterpuncher Donald Trump than Dave Smith?
Oh, it'd be a massacre.
Here's the best part. If the LPMC is able to take over the Libertarian Party, they can change the rules so that Dave Smith can run in the primary and then switch to the LP for the general. Now,
kind of like Gary Johnson 2012.
That's going to offend a lot of people's sensibilities. And to that I say, you are not interested in taking political action. You are interested in making a political statement, and shame on you for taking people's dollars as a consequence of that. Because if all you're interested in is making a political statement, then by all means, do what I'm doing. Write, do a podcast, right? Engage in action like that. Try to influence people to your thing. But if we're going to do a presidential campaign, and like I said, Dave Smith said, join the LP. And so I did. And here I sit talking about the post-libertarian moment a year later. So that's what I want to see, because you know what? Dave Smith is an exceptionally talented communicator, and he actually can do that. And I used to cringe at the fact that people were looking for a messiah, or that people would flock to a cult of personality. But frankly, I understand now that there's just something human about that. So it matters who that person is.
Yeah, we seek instruction. Whether we openly throw flowers at their feet or not, that's how we fall to things.
Yeah, that's what I want to see. And if we're having the conversation, you were saying before, you were on the inside, right? Like people who have been involved with campaigns or like actually operated within the political system. And by that, I mean like the process of running and winning and, you know, reelecting people for office. They understand this too. That's why most of them who are any good don't work in the Libertarian Party, and they work for the Republicans.
There's a reason why I ended up in rooms of freaking Corey Lewandowski and shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just, you know, it's not because I loved elephants that yeah. I did, you know, work with Republicans for a while. It was just because it's like, I need to see some actual change, or else all of it is for nothing.
Yes. And to the point, I think that, and again, to the point I want to reiterate is I do believe, you know, not everybody who would call themselves like post-libertarian or Praxian, as the case may be, would necessarily agree with this, but I do believe that there is enough of an infrastructure that if they wanted to, they could easily, like you said, they already have the pack. They already have the method for fundraising. They already have the infrastructure in place and the people. My charge to the LPMC is to start identifying three types of people. Forget the taking over the party. I know, by the way, that I can't stop them, but I'm just, you know, for the sake of argument, forget taking over the party. You need to look for three people. You need to look for people who want to run for office. This is very obvious to me, by the way. Like, you look for people. This is basic politics too. Run for office, run a campaign, have the money to support it. Those are the only.
You're creating the fourth one,
which is
not having publicly gotten into fights with prostitutes.
That helps.
That does help.
That helps. That does help.
Free advice.
Yeah. Don't do that.
If you're going to fight a hooker, understand that they're strikers. They're not grapplers. So if you can get in close, you can make your way out of it, but also don't do it in public, and also take them to court if you can. But I'll leave that for another day.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Those are the three people. You could start running people in local elections starting tomorrow, right? For these very consequential midterms where we know turnout is lower and generally speaking, people are going to be favorable to. One more point, because it's important. Basic political science in the United, and basic political science point here. And it's something that I had to be dragged to kicking and screaming. Our Republican form of government with a winner-take-all system creates the two-party system, right? It's not this accident of the universe. It creates a two-party system. Moreover, the Westminster model, it makes with proportional representation, makes it easier for multiple parties to be elected. But you know what happens when those multiple parties are elected is they still coalesce into a voting block along two-party lines, which is to say, even if we had the magical representation system that made the libertarians easy to get into Congress, they were going to caucus with the Republicans anyway, because otherwise you wouldn't have a governing coalition, right? Let's imagine that it's a sizable third party such that we see in like the UK or other parliamentary systems. So again, just the form of the government lends it to this as well. And to the point, we've already established in 2020 that in the face of tyranny, most people don't turn libertarian, they comply. And again, I think there is just something human in that. And I think it's shameful for people who consider themselves of an intellectual vanguard to not understand and respect that about the average person. That they're not interested in pursuing politics the way that we might be, or political ideas. Again,
They just want to show up on election day.
Mm-hmm.
When 90% of the decisions have already been made for them.
Yes. Yeah. And so instead of fighting that and trying to, you know, create the perfect world, right, which is, you know, not to be too rude about it, but that's kind of a Marxian idea. The idea that we can create man in the image that we want and not take the constrained view vis-a-vis Thomas Sowell, who says that man is, you know, that we are a being with a nature, again, that biological instinctual level that we've talked about here. You know, it's kind of taking the unconstrained view of man to think that we can reform politics. And I say this as somebody who has argued differently in the past, but such a critical event like 2020, the lockdowns, this pandemic that we've been living through, the fact that there are now internal passports in the United States, right? You never thought that was going to happen. There are internal passports in the United States right now, and they're not going away unless we have the reactionary elements of this country. And guess what? It's not just going to be us. We have to build bridges and build coalitions. I'm just not interested in building coalitions with people who don't see the tyranny for what it is.
I could not have said that better myself. LB, we're up on time, and I gotta, you know, make sure that we can get this up in time for people and everything. If people want to go ahead and argue with you on Twitter, check out your work and everything else that you do, how could they do so?
I am the mind behind the Been Awake Project for Better Sense Making. Please go to beenawake.com and subscribe with your email address so that we can stay in contact. You get original work and my podcast all through the email. You can subscribe on all the major podcasters, Been Awake, and you can follow me on all social media. I'm mostly active on Twitter, but I have an Instagram at the LB Muniz. That's MUNIZ.
LB, greatly appreciate it, folks. If you value conversations like this and you want to help get it to a larger audience, please. It costs you nothing but means everything to me. A 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Google, Stitcher, Play, wherever you're listening to the show across Al Gore's amazing internet. As always, be safe, be good, good night.